listener.
Electric trucks have got a long way to go.
We already know that the future is electric, but we also know just how much truckies love their traditional grunty engines. So what needs to happen to encourage our biggest road users to make the switch? How viable is that? How soon is that switch?
The infrastructure is not there. The weight penalty is substantial. And of course, the distance, particularly with one trailer, let alone with three, simply is a long way away.
Successfully electrifying our road freight industry is a big task, but it's a really important one that could have huge impacts for our future.
Hi everybody, welcome to What's Under the Bonnet. Firstly, can we say a massive thank you to all of you who listen. We've had some of our biggest months ever in the history of this podcast, and that is all thanks to our great community that follow and listen regularly to What's Under the Bonnet. I can't do these episodes without my co-driver. Sadly, they're not here today, but we have got Nadine Armstrong. Hello, my friend.
I'm kidding. You're across the ditch, right? But do that in the room and it'll be a different story. How are you?
I'm great. This is going to be a good episode because it's kind of transport, real world sort of stuff that has an impact that is broader than just the trucking industry, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Today, we're sort of stepping out of our regular EV programming and we're stepping into an e-truck. So the trucking and logistics industry is an area of electromobility that doesn't really make it into the limelight. But you know what? We know that it should. I know that it should. One, without trucks, we wouldn't have food on our plates or clothes on our backs. But also, there have been some pretty exciting developments in this space since we last spoke.
Just last month, Queensland announced that it's going to allow electric trucks to carry freight on some major roads as a part of their major road network, if you will. This is the first time it's ever done so. And there's some surprising data out of China that's shown that electrifying the trucking sector may not be as hard as first predicted. So here's a couple of numbers for you. I mean, 10% of EVs sold in China from 2021 to 2023 were heavy-duty trucks, and around 16% were light commercial vehicles. So 10% mightn't sound like much, but heavy trucks are supposed to be the hardest market, they say, to electrify, and kind of hitting that 10% puts them just a few years really behind passenger cars, which is a good signal across markets around the globe that electrifying trucking could be a viable business venture.
Yeah, I get it. Is exciting, isn't it? I mean, e-trucks could be just around the corner because you're right, it is the hardest sector to decarbonise because it is so vast. So freight trucks account for only 8% of travel on our roads, but 27% of transport emissions. And if you've ever been to a truck show, you'll know what I mean when I say this, that it's really more than a career. It really is. The trucking industry and logistics, it's a lifestyle. So it's really no wonder there have been some resistance to e-trucks here in Australia. There is one company that's tackling some of these issues head on though, Volvo. And we're going to be talking to Matt Wood from Volvo about how they are looking at these issues and how are they addressing the concerns of truckies across the industry.
We're not saying electric is going to take over everything. Now, we've got a multi-pronged approach to decarbonisation. EV is just one of them.
What are those major concerns that our truckies have with e-trucks though? To find out, we have something of a veteran truckie. He might hate me saying that, but he's a long-distance freight engineer. He knows the game intimately and regularly talks about it too. Rod Hanafy is on the line. Hello, mate.
Good morning, mate. How are you going?
It's terrific to have you with us. Can we get a sense of, firstly, what are you driving today?
Mate, I'm driving a K200 Kenworth big cab. Generally, I tow B-doubles up and down the eastern seaboard. I'm only doing a single into Sydney today for a bit of a change. But, mate, runs on diesel, carry 1,500 litres, roughly maybe 1.7, 1.8 kilometres to the litre as a B-double. You go hooking three trailers on and start pulling 100 tonne, sort of comes back to about 1 kilometre to the litre.
I think you've racked up, is it 6 million Ks? That's wild.
Over 6 million, yes. I'm aiming for 7. I've got 7 children, mate, so I'm aiming for 7, so that's 1 million for each. I actually drove my first road train when I was 16.
Wow.
And then I fronted up to get my license in a semi-trailer. They weren't really impressed with that, but he passed me. Since then, I worked in a container park for a number of years, did local work, and then probably 25 years ago, I started doing line haul in fuel tankers. I've been everywhere except from Port Hedland to Darwin. I'm very much involved in road safety. I'm a road transport and road safety advocate, past president of the National Road Freighters Association, which I've been involved with for many years to try and help the industry from the point of view of drivers and operators. And, mate, it's very frustrating in that all of the laws that we operate under as truckies are made by other people who don't have to live by them.
Gotcha. Mm.
They all tell us how to do the job. None of them have to do it. So I live in the truck 5 to 6 days a week. Occasionally I'll go away somewhere and I won't get home for 3 weeks. The facilities on the roads have dropped off. COVID had a big impact on that, but it's very hard to live healthily and safely on the road. The roads are falling apart, yet the freight task is still set to double in the next 20 years and we are struggling to get drivers, and it's only getting worse in that regard because we have an ageing workforce in Australia and people's understanding of life and what they want out of it is different, and people don't want to go and live in a truck for 6 days a week now.
Rod, I'm glad you sort of touched on some of that because that was one of the next questions we wanted to talk about. For people that aren't, can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, your safety, your comfort, what it's like to actually that day-to-day operation of a truck driving and also the complexities, like you say, of keeping your truck on the road and keeping it safe?
Mate, I love what I do and I've made it into a hobby and a passion. I've been writing for Owner Driver magazine. I think this is my 23rd year. I did radio on the ABC, then a show called Rig Radio and another show called Overnight Express, and now I'm doing a spot on Triple M with Luke Boner overnight. I've written to government inquiries and submissions I've had and take people for a ride in the truck to see it from our point of view, because it's one thing to try and explain to someone what it's like to live on the road. Mm. It's another to say, and look, I had a gentleman from the NTC, it's the National Transport Commission, many years ago, and he rang me and he said, oh, I said, I've got approval. He said, I'm going to come and do a trip with you in the truck from Melbourne to Albury. And I said, no, you're not. What do you mean? I said, mate, you come with me up the Hume Highway, you're going to see one side of the industry that the best road in Australia at the time, it's not now, it's not being maintained.
It's not indicative.
Probably the best is the Pacific Highway because it's the most recently rebuilt. But, mate, I said, if you don't come to Dubbo, you don't come with me at all. And he took pretty much offence to that. You know, I worked for NTC, you know, and I said, well, that's really nice, but you must learn the truth, not what you believe or have some perception of. I let you go off and with that understanding I'm doing a disservice. And in the end, he came with me in the truck, and I actually had someone compliment me months later that that bloke had done a 180-degree turnaround. Mm. Look, safety. Motorists, we do not teach motorists to share the road with trucks. We never have. We don't do enough of it now. And I suppose the other thing is, mate, Australia relies on trucks. Mm. In England, I visited there. I did a Churchill Fellowship tour looking at trucks and sharing the road. And they were wearing shirts that said, without trucks, you would be cold, naked and hungry. In America, they have a saying that says, if you don't want trucks on this road, stop buying shit, which is what it says on the back of the truck. Look, for us, it's not just the transport. It is a logistics industry. Mm. Everything in Australia travels on a truck at least once. And even if you use the rail, you've still got to get it on a truck to get it to the end of the rail line, because you can't have a rail into the back of every Woolies supermarket or, you know, every little shop in Australia. And whilst people can be intimidated by larger trucks, we are the most efficient industry in trucking anywhere in the world.
Wow.
Specifically because we rely mainly on B-doubles now, and of course the use of road trains in our remote areas. We have a very safe industry. Our accident rate has decreased even more than that of cars. Mm.
You touched on the reliability and you know, that it is a logistics business. It's not just about getting a truck from A to B. There is so much that hinges on you being where you need to be on time, getting there safely. So it sort of brings us to the idea of e-trucks. You know, tell me about that ripple effect. If you are stuck on the side of the road and unable to fix your truck, how does that work? And is there some kind of conversation going around now around that move to e-mobility for the trucking logistics sector? What are people talking about in that regard?
Mate, it's a bit like, you know, years ago, all you needed to fix a Holden was a 9/16 half-inch spanner and a hammer and a bit of wire. Unfortunately, the cars now are way beyond that, and so are the trucks. Mm. Much of the technology that you see in cars is standard: active emergency braking, lane departure, active cruise control. They're all in the new trucks. And whilst autonomous, I believe, is still a way away in Australia, I think hydrogen is another option and maybe something that's more suited to long haul. Now, if you've got a garbage truck or you've got a local truck and it runs around Sydney and it does pickups and it parks up at night and you can charge it, that's probably where it's best suited. But to run line haul, there is a truck in WA, but it's operating on a closed loop circuit, so it's not operating on the highway. Mm. And I've just heard that Queensland are looking at an e-road network. But I've got to say to you, mate, from what I've read and heard, the first truck's going to be registered and they are going to allow it 8 tonne on the steer axle, where I'm currently only allowed 7, and that's having to jump through two hoops, one having a Euro 5, so a clean engine or better, and the other having a cab standard and then having wider tyres. And I'm only allowed 17 tonne on the drive, and we get abused by the authorities for damaging their roads. Now, first thing, if the roads were perfectly smooth, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. Mm. The roads are not perfect. And yes, in the past, truckies could fix things, but the electronics in the engine has made one sensor fail and you're on the side of the road sitting there waiting for some bloke to come out and fix it. That's got harder. And I suppose it's like any technology. When computers first came about, people said, that'll never take off. It got to the point where now everybody has one virtually in their phone. So it is about, in theory, making life easier and better and cleaner and greener. But the transition and the point of getting there, and then it may suit some things better than others.
Are your colleagues nervous? Are they open to this idea? What is, broadly speaking, the willingness to consider this change?
It's a long way removed from the average driver at the moment. Mm. And I only had a conversation with a fellow yesterday. He said, boss thought about buying one, found out that he was going to have to buy two because while one was working, the other would be charging and he was going to have to buy two to do the same job. And the margins are very tight in our industry. My belief is that diesel's going to be around unless there is some enormous breakthrough in battery size or capacity mm-hmm. or charging. Those are the factors that are holding it back. Obviously, the weight we've discussed, they're allowing this truck on and giving it weight increases. But, mate, if I'm 500 kilos overweight, I get a big fine.
Wow.
And yet they're going to give another tonne and a half on the drive to a vehicle because of the fact it has an electric battery. And, yes, it has a reduction in emissions, so there is a give and take. But is that reduction in emissions sufficient, and the cost of the battery and the maintenance of the battery and what life will they get? And the technology of the cars, you know, they're very quick off the mark. They have regenerative braking, and that's something that we've never had anything like before. That might be really good in stop-start traffic, but as I say, for line-haul, long-distance trucks, it's either going to be diesel or hydrogen for some time unless there's some big breakthrough with the batteries.
Rod, you mentioned that your diesel has a 1,500-litre tank and your car 1.7 was a fairly optimistic fuel consumption figure. How often would you actually stop to put petrol in, or is it something that you have this, you know, scheduled to the nth degree that you know how far you can get?
No, look, I run different places all over the time. My route is not the same every week. It varies. Sometimes it's one trailer, rarely. Mostly it's two. Sometimes it's three or four. So you have a plan and you have an idea of what you do. Obviously, I have a fuel gauge as well, so I know how that works. And this truck uses AdBlue. Mm-hmm. So it is a Euro 6 engine. It's one of the cleanest engines on the road. And the exhaust, you can actually stick your hand in the exhaust and it's still clean. So we are doing that part of industry to reduce emissions and those sorts of things. I'm sure you're aware of a trial that was done of trucks that had removable batteries. And that was being trialed between Brisbane and Sydney. Mm. So they would go from Brisbane halfway down, they would pull into a site, they had a forklift, they would pull the battery out, put a new battery in, the truck would carry on to Sydney, same thing happened there. Now, if you have a truck that's all it does and you can schedule that, that's fine. But what happens when that truck gets to Sydney? Oh, we want it to go to Melbourne. Oh, hang on, it can't go to Melbourne because there's nowhere to change the battery for it, or it's not going to make it to Melbourne because it's going to be out of charge and it's going to be on the side of the road. And there was a battery fire in a truck recently, and it's hard enough. You know, we're not immune from fires. You have tyre fires, you have bearing fires, you do have engine failures occasionally. It's obviously fairly spectacular when it happens, but that's a general fire and they can put it out. Electric fires are a whole new ball game, very difficult to put out. And whilst that was traced back to a faulty cell, was it manufacturing? Was it something that bumping down, up and down the road had an effect on it? Nobody knows those answers yet. And those are the things where the technology has to be tested and trialed and brought to a level that it will be acceptable. But I think we've a way to go.
Rod, something that we talk about a lot in the passenger vehicle segment is infrastructure. Obviously, it's something that's holding a lot of people back, and no doubt it will be exactly the same for e-trucks. So what would truckies need in terms of infrastructure-wise? And like you say, it's not like there's one truck that does one job. It's one truck has multiple routes, multiple things that it needs to be able to deliver on. So how would that kind of system work for the trucking industry?
There are some that do one job. You know, it does depend on the volume of work that you have. And if you've got a set run, then you could probably look at instituting something, particularly if the truck worked during the day and sat down at night, you've got an opportunity to charge or replace and do something like that. And that may prove effective. But as soon as you send it somewhere else, it's not going to work. You look at running to Perth, like it's 3,500 kilometres out of the eastern seaboard to Perth, and that's a long way. And blokes do that regularly. I've got to say the roads over there are generally better, but we won't tell anybody that. Same in the Northern Territory. How do you schedule that? And if you've scheduled it to run for 500 kilometres and all of a sudden at 350 it's run out because it had to go stop, start in the traffic and it got stopped halfway up a hill and then it used a lot more power, what are you going to do with it on the side of the road then?
Rod, can we come to something a little different in the discussion now? We often hear it on the program about people that have tried an EV for the first time, and that is sound. Maybe the elimination of loud engine noise, diesel noise and so on, has it been something that they've reflected on that is it maybe a little bit more pleasurable in the job that they're doing because it's quieter?
So you're aware of the two types of trucks we have. We have a bonneted truck or a conventional, which has the engine out in front, then the cab behind. Mm-hmm. And then you have a cab over engine, where obviously the cab sits over the top of the engine. Now, our length laws in Australia apply to the whole combination. If you look in America, the length laws only apply to the trailer, so they have great big trucks out the front with a block of flats, a shower, a toilet, you know, and an apartment on the back of them. And, geez, they're a hell of a lot better to ride in for comfort. They're a lot better to live in when you travel around America in a truck. Our laws prohibit that, and we've been trying to fight that for many, many years. Noise. There are blokes who get deaf, but that's having the window down too. That's probably where the majority of the noise really comes from is window noise and wind noise. So the aerodynamics affects that more than the engine. I think, honestly, the biggest factor is the ride and the lifestyle and not having proper rest areas and food and facilities. I think that's far more important than the noise at this stage.
Gotcha.
Might be nicer to listen to a podcast, but yeah, that's probably the only side of that.
The other thing that we thought about in the lead up to today's interview, and you've kind of reflected on the shortage of drivers that the industry faces at the moment, are there enough technicians? Are there enough mechanics and so on? And are we doing enough to encourage that side of the game and get them tooled up and ready from a skill set standpoint for this push into e-mobility from a trucking standpoint?
We had hoped that the technology in the trucks and the safety features might encourage some younger people to look at it. The world has changed from where we were. And look, you can earn really good money driving interstate, but the biggest cost is on your family, on your lifestyle. Getting young people to leave school now, because we have a graduated licensing system, that means that they look at the job and they say, geez, I don't really want to do that. Trying to live healthily on the road, nearly impossible. And mate, I went to load last night and I got there and the bloke said, oh, this is going to be a balls up. Why is that? He said, well, as soon as I saw you were coming, I didn't think that was going to work because the place you're going to, you've got to unload out the back doors. You haven't got back doors, have you? No? Oh, well, that could be a problem. So there's one tiny factor that meant I sat there for 2 hours to get loaded. They had to rearrange it all. They pulled a load from today. I ended up in a different place that I hadn't been to. And I got roused on there because I didn't have the instructions to get in there properly. Mm. And that was trying to get a semi into a place that I shouldn't have been in, let alone get a B-double in there. So there's so many factors. And if you could turn around and say to young people, we're going to have these clean, efficient trucks, but you can't drive any more than 200 out, 200 back, we've got a long way to go to make it palatable. And it's not just our industry. It's every industry in Australia, I'm sure you're aware, is struggling to get people in.
Rod, you've given us some incredible insight to the trucking industry. Are there any final things that you would love for the industry to know, for us to put some more questions out to the industry? Is there anything that you really want people to be thinking about as they push to this e-mobility structure for trucks?
Mate, there's technology coming. They're looking at fatigue. They're looking at those things. But monitoring fatigue is fine, except if it tells you to stop, you've got to have somewhere to stop. We don't have enough rest areas. I have a website that has the truckies' top 10 tips. So I'm very much involved with sharing the road with caravans. If you've ever seen a caravan with Channel 18, Bill and Sue on the back, I started that as the Caravanners Channel. Mate, simply a little bit of empathy. We do a job that is not recognised or respected from where I sit. Yes, I will say to you, we're not all perfect. We're human. We make mistakes at times. And there are some people I wouldn't let drive a wheelbarrow, mate. Mm. But I can't control all of that as well. So if people have a little bit of empathy, it will take a lot of the stress off driving on our roads. And I think that's got to be a good thing all round.
Great way to finish. That is Rod Hanafy joining us on the podcast today, who does a super job with Luke Boner on Triple M, our sister station here at Listener. Thank you very much for joining us on What's Under the Bonnet today.
Mate, that website is truckright.com.au. People go and have a read of some of those things. If one of them is helped and prevents an accident, then all my work has been worth it, mate. And I wish safe travelling to everybody out there.
Rod's message there to be a little empathetic to truck drivers is a strong one for all of us road users, right? But also maybe the OEMs and government bodies who make those decisions around how and when we transition to cleaner sources of transport. Because let's face it, it's people like Rod who actually put in the hard yards, changing it up in their routines and their habits to make it possible, right? What do you think? We'd love to hear from you about what you think on this subject in our listener mail segment. We'll pick that one up again in our next episode of What's Under the Bonnet. Email us podcast@carsales.com.au.
If I took anything from our chat with Rod, it's that transitioning truckies into EVs is going to be a tough job. I do not envy the people trying to do it, but we do have them on the line to talk about it. Matthew Wood from Volvo Trucks, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Volvo was the first manufacturer to successfully launch a heavy-duty truck range in Australia. And we know the battle we're seeing with the transition to EVs in passenger vehicles. So what do you currently have on the road, and tell us about the products?
So basically, for every diesel truck that we have in our range, we have an electric equivalent from a medium-duty truck that you see around town, which is about 16 and a half tonnes, right up to a 44-ton semi. So it covers the whole lot.
So we have been talking to a veteran truckie earlier in the pod today, and he talked a little bit about his, diesel's got a 1,500-litre tank and how far he can go and, roughly the consumption that he's getting. How do you think about that for an electric truck? So how do you think about battery design, composition? What do you have to consider in designing that for the trucking segment?
I think what needs to be really clearly stated, and we say this all the time, that we're not saying electric is going to take over everything. Now, we've got a multi-pronged approach to decarbonisation. EV is just one of them. Our heavy-duty electric Primeva has a range of up to 300 k's. It's a long way from Brisbane to Melbourne, and that's a lot of charges. For example, I drove a loaded FH electric, that's a semi, from Brisbane to Canberra, and it took me 2 days when a diesel truck would do it in one day. Now, the future for us looks like a mix of urban and regional roles with electric and potentially hydrogen for longer distances and or internal combustion engine running on a renewable fuel.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, we know that electric vehicles are heavier and obviously that will translate then some in the trucking industry. So things around allowed curb weights and gross load limits for a truck with a battery on board.
How do I say this in a way that doesn't make me sound like a complete geek? But basically, so Australia is unique in the world in terms of it has allowable weights per axle. And please don't fall asleep while I'm saying this. So and currently with a normal truck, that's 6.5 ton. So we've had a big fight to get allowances made for the EVs being heavier. So an electric prime mover is about 2 tons heavier than a diesel for a start. And they are heavier on that front steer axle. It's not a Volvonian problem. It's not a Volvo thing. It's actually just a zero emissions heavy vehicle thing. Like a hydrogen fuel cell powered truck would probably need 10 tons of the steer axle.
I'm interested in the definition of a Volvonian and if they were kind of BC or AD. Anyway, that's another matter. Hey, consumers, when it comes to EVs generally, cars I'm talking about, a number of their buying decisions factor into it, obviously. And one of those is end-of-life processes, yep. Right? So what about end-of-life for truck batteries?
So about 18 months ago, Volvo Group globally launched a new business unit called Volvo Energy. And the purpose of Volvo Energy is to manage the entire life cycle of the batteries that we use. One of the nice things about the way the trucks are built is the batteries are nice and accessible, like they're not hidden away as a part of the architecture of the vehicle. As a traction battery, it may have a life of 7 years, 8 years, maybe 10 years as a traction battery, depending on the charging regime that's used and all of that sort of thing. But it's still got a life left in it after that. So then the intention would be that Volvo Energy would then repurpose that battery for domestic or industrial storage. And then once it's outlived its usefulness in that capacity, it's then taken to pieces and recycled. And there's a lot of inroads been made by people in the battery recycling area. Another Swedish company, a battery company called Northvolt, they made a 99% or a 95% recycled battery cell recently. So people are really pushing hard in that area because, you know, there's a lot going into the mining of these resources and things like that. We need to make sure that we get every little bit of value out of that value chain.
We've seen a few examples of battery swapping for large trucks. Is that something that Volvo's exploring and how does that actually work?
Not really, no. And there's a couple of reasons for that. At the moment, our system's a 600-volt system that will, I would suggest that, like, if you look at any other electrification applications, that's probably going to increase, not decrease. These trucks work in industrial environments. You know, safety is a core value at Volvo, so the idea of a connection, a high-voltage connection that gets plugged and unplugged constantly in a dirty environment day after day, it's kind of not really ideal. The other thing is that when the battery is a part of the vehicle, you actually can have a thermal management system around it, right? Mm. You know, you walk past a Tesla on a hot day, you'll hear it humming away, you know, keeping its batteries at the right level. You can't do that with a battery swap scenario. You can only have sort of fans around it and such.
Matt, Nadine will tell you that my grey matter is very limited, so this probably sounds like a very obvious question. Do you charge an e-truck the same way that you do as an EV? And more broadly, can I extend that question to infrastructure? What is happening with infrastructure around charging across the country and perhaps even Volvo's part in that improvement, that process?
Look, we pretty much consult with our customers around the whole ecosystem around the truck, not just the truck. Our salespeople actually can't quote a new truck without doing a range simulation first to make sure that the truck will do the job. Only once that application's qualified can you then quote. In terms of the plugs, we use CCS2 just like you do with most other EVs. The biggest challenge and one I found on my road trip to Canberra was that you're trying to squeeze a semi into a place designed for light vehicles, which causes a little bit of mayhem. So what we're finding is from a charging perspective is that the trucks that we're delivering now are generally on a back-to-base kind of application. They're not sort of driving a long distance and having to charge multiple times. So the customers are putting charging infrastructure in their depots.
Our earlier guest on the pod was talking, you know, specifically about really long-haul trucking. You know, we know people complain about having to, you know, stop and charge their car, but for a logistics company, having, you know, downtime is just, you know, money wasting for them. Is sort of, you know, do they invest in multiple trucks so they've always got one charged and ready to go? You know, it's not the perfect solution for them, but what, how are they going to come to some kind of compromise around factoring in time to charge a large truck?
They won't need to, because they won't be using EVs for that role. So, like, you know, we're very, very clear. We are not talking about putting this, an electric prime mover, on the Newell Highway to drive to Melbourne. Like, it's, battery electric will only get better. So when we first launched our first little medium-duty truck over 2 years ago now, that went to Linfox, where the truck's still working, it had a range of 220 Ks. That same truck, model truck, if you ordered that now, it would have 450 Ks of range. You know, that's the rate, the pace of change. But those heavy haul, long distance roles will either involve alternate fuels, even green hydrogen. There are a lot of possibilities there. But, you know, the idea that we're going to be dragging road trains through the desert with EVs is probably not going to happen in this country. And I think it's usually what the social media commentary talks about, like, oh, you can't drive that to Darwin. Well, we're not actually trying to get anyone to drive that to Darwin. We're just trying to make sure that the cleanest, safest trucks on the road are the ones that are delivering the milk to the local primary school, not a 50-year-old diesel belching truck. Clean up the urban environment first, right?
Quite often when we're talking about new energy vehicles, people want to look at the entire life cycle, how something is built, not just sort of tailpipe emissions. You know, how do you measure that for building a truck and running a truck?
Well, so for us, even our diesel truck, so even a diesel FH, which I'm not sure you guys are aware, a lot of people find this quite surprising. We actually build these trucks in Australia. So We've got a manufacturing plant at Wacol on the outskirts of Brisbane. So you could arguably say, I don't know if you want to include caravans in this or not, but we're probably now Australia's largest automotive manufacturer, because we do probably quite a few thousand trucks out of that factory every year. And we will be building EVs there by 2028. So yeah, if you see a Volvo truck on the road, you'll see an Australian-made sticker on the side. So they are certified Australian-made. But that truck, for example, that you might see on the road, already 35% of that truck is made from recycled material. 95% of our emissions are our vehicles actually on the road in use. The rest of it is our facilities. So all of our facilities in Australia run on renewables. The cabs, all the steel's recyclable. We also have a remanufacturing business that takes the trucks to pieces, reconditions a lot of the components, and then resells them as warranty-backed spare parts, if you like. So apart from the consumables, which are, you know, tyres and stuff like that, you know, we still have work to do, but we do a lot of work on circularity and making sure that we can get as much value out of every part of that cycle as we can.
Well, we've got you. Can we just talk roadside assist, if you don't mind? What is on offer in that regard?
On the whole, as an employed driver, most companies just go, oh, you've got a flat tyre, stay there, we'll call the tyre service and come and get it. With a Volvo, there's a button on the dash. It's a VAS, that's Volvo Action Service. If you have a technical issue, you press that. You'll be connected to a human being in a call centre, and that's 24/7. They already know where the truck is because you've pressed that button. They'll have all the information like the chassis number and things like that. So they actually will know what vehicle you're sitting in and what its specifications are. Not only that, they can also get a fair idea of, like, if there's a code been thrown or something like that. So it really is that simple. That's a part of that, the sort of service agreement contract that comes with the truck.
We know that roadside assist itself has sort of changed a lot with over-the-air updates and so on. So are some of those issues things that could potentially be fixed remotely? So that sophistication of knowing what truck they're in, what vehicle it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So The connectivity with the vehicle, we can send software to an individual vehicle. We can also do some basic parameter programming updates as well. I used to joke with drivers in a previous role that they'd better be nicer, I'd speed limit their vehicle to 80, you know, because, you know, technically you could do that. You can't do that while they're moving. They have to actually, it's like, It is literally the same as your phone going through a systems update. So, you know, you get asked whether you want to update and you tell it when it's going to update and it updates. So even our diesel trucks do that.
Matt, I think most people listening on the transport side would be interested in your thoughts on what you think the kind of future of electric trucking looks like. I mean, we talk about destination charging quite regularly on this podcast. Do you think that if that stuff is made more attractive, that e-trucks will be more desirable? Or does it come back to what you said before, and that is it's about fit for purpose, using them in a manner around the country that works best?
Look, it really is about fit for purpose. It never ceases to amaze me how emotive people get about a form of propulsion, because there seems to be like a politics attached to it, right? The reality is that the vast majority of our population live in large cities. We have decarbonisation targets ourselves. Half of the vehicles we sell by 2030 need to be zero emissions. Now, no, I said zero emissions, not electric. So it will be a fit for purpose approach, because you know, I spend a lot of time in the outback, for example. Now, we're not for a minute suggesting that old mate in the Western Queensland with this free trailer road train running at 130 tonnes is going to be doing that with an electric truck. He's not. In 100 years' time, maybe he will be, but like, you know, certainly not in my lifetime. But, you know, I'll give you a good example. And we had to really push to get this, but HVO, for example, hydro-treated vegetable oil, it's only just been recognised as a fuel in Australia. You can run any truck on that. You can run a 30-year-old truck on it. You can run a brand-new truck on it and still retain a warranty. Just even by using that would take out your well-to-wheel emissions, your carbon footprint. That alternate fuel space will be where that heavy, long-distance kind of stuff is. The charging of the future for EVs will be a lot of back-to-base operations. The batteries will get better. They'll only continue to evolve. Our truck at the moment has a gearbox because we didn't have an e-axle, so speed to market. We went to market with a gearbox. Within probably 2 years, it'll have an e-axle, so then it'll have more chassis real estate for more batteries. Battery chemistry will improve. We just launched an aero model in Europe. There's probably a very good chance that we will use that as an EV here in Australia. And you start to pick up 1% here, 2% there, all of that sort of thing. But we need to be really clear that, like, we're electrifying what we can now, and as it gets better, we'll continue to electrify that. But some of the really severe duty, long haul, heavy haul kind of solutions, EV probably won't be suitable for. And that's where you'll find maybe hydrogen fuel cell might, or maybe just using hydrogen internal combustion, like, so basically direct injection of hydrogen into an internal combustion engine. So these are all possibilities.
Matt, this has been awesome. Thank you very much for coming on and chatting with us about it today. And to all the Volvonians out there, we've learned a little something today, hey?
My pleasure. Always good to chat.
Hey, we're out of time, but with good reason. There's been so much fantastic stuff in this episode, hasn't there?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you think about the consumer passenger car market, then, you know, the massive challenge that the trucking and logistics have. It's just mind-blowing.
I love the insights that we've had on the show today. Don't forget to keep an eye out for the What Report. That is being released in a fortnight's time. On behalf of Nadine and all of our car sales and listener team, we'll catch you next time. Bye for now. Listener.